This is DreamWords. Tom Corvin by Paul Story.
Chapter 35. In the sudden quiet of the early morning, Tom's mood lifted as he walked up the steps. Close by, a lone cuckoo claimed the morning and the waiting trees breathed the soft sigh of a wandering, fragrant breeze. Ripe flowers seemed to suddenly line every border of the lawn, and the grey house sparkled with windows and the promise of memories yet to be revealed, memories of his forgotten childhood. And yet, it wasn't forgotten. If this was home, what then his Cregan dreams, Kathleen and Tess? Soon, he told himself on that slow walk up the stairs, soon he would know. Soon he would have peace. And soon, he hoped, Tess would be found and the craziness of the past days laid to rest at last. These were not real, conscious thoughts forming in his mind, but rather a state of being. A reaction to hearing that Catriona was safe and that somehow this was home. Somehow. The schizophrenic bastion glowered over them, infecting Tom's mood with wild and extreme swings. His slow climb slowed further still, legs and heart growing weary, oxygen sucked from the air as though the house sat atop a hellish, forbidding mountain. Howard forged ahead, and looking past him, the glint of glass became the glint of watching eyes, and the dawn chorus whispered a warning too low to be heard. By the time he reached the waiting figure at the top of the stairs, the house had turned grey again, and behind every dark pane of glass a watcher watched with infinite patience. The man was almost, but not quite, old. He stood stiff and formal, dressed in black suit, white shirt and plain dark tie. His hands were clasped to his front and he bowed his head to the inspector. "Sir Charles is ready for you, Inspector. Please, follow me." The man ignored the boy as though he didn't exist. If this was his home, then why was he ignored so? As he approached the house, Tom's mood continued to darken. He tried and failed to find that elusive connection with the place that had to be there. This was his home after all. They crossed a large tiled hall, the policeman's clacking shoes muffled by the thick carpet of a large but simply furnished room on the other side. An unlit fireplace, sterile white walls and a large mirror over the mantelpiece defined the space. Evenly spread in a neat line around the walls, dozens of framed photographs showed a man shaking important hands and smiling important smiles. The butler, Jason the inspector had called him, gestured to a small burgundy sofa and ushered Tom to sit. In the same movement, he nodded to Howard. "If you follow me, Inspector, Sir Charles will see you immediately." The policeman glanced at Tom and smiled. "Will you be okay?" he asked. Tom nodded. He was still numb and welcomed the time alone. The two men left and Jason closed the door behind him. Suddenly remembering the last time someone did that, Tom crossed the room and tried the handle. It was open. Breathing easier, he turned and studied his surroundings. Bright as the room was, Tom was struck by the silence, enhanced, it seemed, by the tick, tick of a large grandfather clock swinging its pendulum in the corner by a huge bay window. He thought of Catriona, wondering how he could see her, when he remembered the photograph of his sister. Howard had told him nothing and probed him at length about the girl. It seemed, on reflection, more of a subtle and suspicious interrogation than a gentle, condescending brief. The policeman did not appear to believe that the boy remembered nothing, and to be fair, Tom hadn't exactly told the complete truth. Looking out the massive window, he thought hard about what it all meant. The pictures used in this search were old. Was he really to believe that he and his sister had somehow lived all this time without aging? Something deep and profound inside told him that the idea was not as fanciful as it first seemed. He scanned the view outside, hoping to see something that would hook a memory. The window looked out to the front lawn where the helicopter had landed. There, standing at the top of the curved steps where the butler had greeted him, an old man shuffled painfully at the policeman's side. He was bent, an ebony cane topped with ivory held in his right hand, while his other elbow was supported respectfully by Howard. Like this, they descended the steps with infinite care, all the time talking, their heads close in conspiratorial communication. They disappeared from view for a few moments and reappeared beyond the rise on the other side of the driveway. There, huddled together like old friends, they sat on a bench looking onto the lawn and the forest beyond. Tom wondered what they were talking about. He supposed he was updating the old man about Tessa. As he thought about this, Tom realized that he did not know what the relationship between him and the old man actually was. As he pondered this puzzle, a white police car drew gently along the drive towards the house. The pair on the bench rose, the old man gripping the younger's hand in both of his and shaking it. Howard opened the passenger door and ducked inside. The car drove on, completing a circle around the lawn before it was re-swallowed by the forest, gone as if it was never there. At the sight of the empty drive, Tom suddenly felt wary. A nagging unease had been building and now he felt alone and defenseless. He had been staring at the spot where the road entered the forest and had not noticed the old man's painful ascent of the stone steps. But suddenly there he was, no more than 15 meters from the window where he stood. The stranger looked his way and their eyes met. The wrinkled mouth turned upwards, the watery gaze steady and warm. The old man was pleased to see him. His posture seemed to improve then, and the shuffling and painfully slow gait became more of a tired limp, and George Silas entered the house to meet the boy he'd lost so very, very long ago. Chapter 36. There was something about the old man that unsettled Tom. He looked ordinary enough with wispy white hair and skin as tough and crumpled as tree bark. There was indeed an intangible quality that was familiar to him, something that made the boy queasy when his host entered the room and sat in an armchair by the barren hearth. He did not offer his hand but smiled benignly at Tom as he gestured to the sofa opposite him with the tip of his quivering cane.
Sit, boy.
Tom took the seat, backed as far as he could to the far end, trying to distance himself from the growing sense that something was wrong. The vague connection he felt was not one of warmth and love, but of loss, and he was the loser. I'm told this is my home, he said, his voice breaking for what seemed no reason at all.
Do you not recognize me, boy?
The word boy seemed to crawl from the old man's mouth in letters of putrid smoke. Tom shook his head and the illusion vanished as quickly as it had appeared. The horror it dredged from Tom's fractured emotions remained strong and he found himself scanning the room for a means of escape from a threat he could not put his finger on.
I can't remember.
No, you wouldn't.
The old man smiled.
I've changed a little since we last saw each.
No, Tom interrupted. I mean, I don't remember anything, or at least not much.
I know what you mean, boy.
There was a sudden venom in the old man's voice, and it brought back the sickness he'd felt earlier. His stomach heaved in reaction to a subliminal fear.
Who are you?
Whatever was happening, Tom was suddenly tired of being led around as though he had no stake in his own future. First, Chief Inspector Howard, and now this nasty old man with an innate ability to instill unease in people without really trying. The tick, tick, tick of the old clock amplified the silence, and Tom stared into the cruel eyes opposite, determined to fight the impulse to look away. And somewhere, recognition came and went in an instant of connected memories that failed to make it to the surface. The old man ignored Tom's question.
You must be tired and hungry.
He wrinkled his nose.
And you smell as though you haven't showered in 1,000 years.
He seemed amused by something and then rose on shaking legs, pushing down with both hands on the ivory carving of the cane. You haven't answered me, Tom said, all sense of pretense, of inappropriate sensibilities gone. The old man passed him by.
We have much work to do, and you are useless to me in this state.
But if he didn't quite know who he was dealing with yet, Tom felt the full force of his hatred bubble from a festering wound he could not ignore. He reached out and grasped the man's hand as he passed his place on the sofa. He had only intended to stop him leaving, to get him to answer his question, but in touching the flesh, the contact was all he needed to know the horrific truth of who he was. As skin touched skin, Tom saw himself sitting in a high-backed chair, felt his wet feet, the cradle at his neck, and Tessa's comforting grip on his other side. He gasped, withdrew his hand, and jumped to his feet.
You!
Tom backed away and found himself pressed up against the old clock, its tick and tick unaffected by the dramatic events it marked with relentless precision. In almost every way possible, the man standing before him looked nothing like the one he'd seen in his imagination. But he knew now, without a doubt, that the old man was George Silas. He was ancient and weak, and to Tom, it seemed, physically powerless. He could smash him aside with a simple sweep of his hand, but some deep flaw froze him to inaction and threatened to vacate his bowels. The primitive urges to fight or flee tussled and held him back until Silas stood in front of him, his face pressed towards his benign smile now ugly and triumphant, lines of saliva hanging like spidery thread between upper and lower lips.
I've been waiting for you, Tom. We need each other, you and me. Now, tell me.
But Tom had recovered enough to move. He ducked under the old man's arm and ran for the exit.
Stop!
Silas yelled, but Tom's hand was already twisting the handle, pulling the door. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw a movement that brought back the terrible memory of Kathleen and Tessa's ordeal by the cave entrance. Silas raised the cane and pointed its tip towards the boy. But at such a distance, Tom felt safe and threw himself out the door. As he did, a small shushing sound came from the old man's position, and a mild sting like a mosquito bite slapped the back of his hand as it slid around the edge of the wood. The sting turned to fire that spread throughout the boy's body. He jerked spasmodically, flailing on the carpet floor, his muscles contracting and relaxing to the random crackle of electric shocks. He lay helpless, half aware of the shuffling gait of the old man walking towards him. Through twitching and uncontrolled vision, Tom saw the glint in Silas's eye, the joy of the prodigal return. He was happy, very happy. His little boy was once more back in his care.
DreamWorks.com.